Hail Jitters, and welcome to a special in-media res edition of the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
In-media res, Josh. In flagrante delicto. Why are we recording the Always Cheating Podcast on Saturday? Well, as you mentioned, it's the holiday season, and things get kind of crazy during the holidays. We've got various travel plans happening and all sorts of activities that we're trying to work around. But our audience is A-plus number one, big priority. So we're recording this podcast after the Saturday fixtures, prior to Game Week 18 Sunday fixtures, when both of our captains are playing.
Yeah, exactly. As you said, slightly funky timing. So both of us have, I've got three players tomorrow. I think you've got four. So, you know, obviously we're not going to talk too much about the game week at hand, but there's still plenty to talk about when you look ahead to Game Week 19, which is the full day of fixtures on Boxing Day. And it's, in the US it's all through NBC, but I think it's, Amazon is doing the, doing these games in the UK, and that's why they have this incredible spread of matches that start at on our time in the East Coast. It's 7:30 a.m. is when things start, and then I guess they'll be done at 5 p.m. Leicester Liverpool comes out at 3 p.m. So that is a massive day of matches. So we're actually going to go match by match, and ideally not spend like 20 minutes on all of them, but we're going to talk a little bit about each of those fixtures. Just a quick score check though, Brandon, how are you doing so far in Game Week 18?
It's been a little soft through Saturday. I'm on 31 points. The average at the end of the day today was 29 points. So at least I'm above the average. Just very soft in my defense with one pointers from both Diego Rico and Gilbert. Matt Ryan continues sort of his weak sauce streak with the two pointer, and Lord Lundstrom was six. The returns were largely in my midfield with De Bruyne with that great assist, and then Jack Grealish, who you brought in this week as well.
Yep,
Grealish continuing to sort of be in form, looking like a decent pick with good fixtures for Villa going forward.
Yep. And possible Game Week 19 captain.
Yeah, you're going to have to do a little more convincing of me for that. I mean, Villa is like, we were talking about this while watching the Villa Southampton match, and that Villa could be the best looking team to ever just clearly go down in relegation.
That's true.
So I'm really hoping to build on this 31 points on Sunday with Abraham, Rashford, Dele Alli, and my captain Son yet to play.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm doing a little better. I'm on 42. I did take a -3 though. And so,
-3. How'd you manage that?
I made three transfers for -4. That is, I don't have Tammy or, Rashford going into tomorrow. So I'm sweating that out a little bit. I brought in Son. I brought in Aurier, I guess that's how you say it probably. And I brought in Grealish. And so far that has worked out pretty well, you know, very well. I mean, 8 points from Grealish, and we'll see what happens with those two tomorrow. I mean, Aurier was going to be Matt Target, and I kind of just decided I didn't trust the Aston Villa defense at all. And so, you know, the other move I was considering was bringing in another Sheffield United defender. But Sheffield United had quite a tough run coming up after Game Week 19. They play Watford at home, and kind of felt like it was one of those transfers that would have been nice in the short term, but I ultimately would have just been benching a player again and again and again. They play Man City twice in five game weeks, starting in Game Week 20. They play Liverpool away and Arsenal away as well. So as good as their defense is, I think they're in for a tough run ahead. So I ended up going with Aurier just because I felt like it's that classic, there's two ways they can get you points philosophy, you know, and I felt like there was a reasonable chance they'd keep a clean sheet at home to Chelsea, who aren't in the best form, although this could sound hilarious by this time this podcast is listened to. And, you know, he's exhibiting a ton of attacking threat right now, too. So it kind of felt like I was bringing in a little bit of a winger. So we'll see. Late last night, I made two very late transfers, one of which worked out, one of which didn't. It was net -5. That's how it's worked out. I sort of like, you know that thing where you're in bed and you're sort of, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have done this as well. Where you're sort of in bed. You're thinking about
in bed too.
You're thinking about the next week's or the next day's fixtures, and you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to make this move. I think I'm just going to do this. And so I moved Matt Ryan to Nick Pope. Great. That's a net plus five. And I moved Todd Cantwell to Lees Moussey. Whoops. That is a negative nine net. So I came out a negative, I guess a negative four on those two moves. So, you know, it is what it is. It's fine. It was kind of,
this sounds fine.
I mean, it's always annoying when you make a last minute transfer to drop a 10-point player for a 1-point player. It's just another lesson in why you just cannot. The problem for me is, I suppose you can have a super cheap striker like Lees Moussey as long as you have the self-control not to start them all the time. And I do not. If I have a forward who plays even semi-regularly, I will always find an excuse to bring them into my team, into my starting lineup. I just don't have the self-control. And so I'm better off with like some 4-point, Connor Wickham or whatever. It's like someone who can't even play just to stop, like to save me from myself or just upgrade and have a team of Pookie type, like someone who you just know is going to play every single week. And maybe they're not. Danny Ings, I guess, right? I mean, he's not even getting rotated any longer. He's just a player who doesn't get injured and scores a brace every week or whatever it is. It feels that way right now.
Yeah.
His
legs were replaced with legs that don't break down, which is probably the key to success at this point.
Maybe he went to that Kobe Bryant. Have I already made this joke on the podcast? I feel like I've made a Kobe Bryant blood spinning joke about Danny Ings already, but even if I haven't, it has to be true because he's like a completely different player. Congrats to anybody. It's impressive.
Less that, more. Do you remember Rivers Cuomo got that surgery because one of his legs was longer than the other, so he got the surgery to even out his legs?
No.
Maybe Danny Ings was getting injured so often because one of his legs was longer than the other.
That's crazy.
He got the Rivers Cuomo treatment.
I wonder if he did that like in between Pinkerton and the Green Album, and there's something like something happened when once his legs started working again, and was like,
I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Definitely.
So 42, I guess 38, once you factor in the minus four, it does put me, I guess I'm on a little red arrow. It looks like when you include the subs, I'm down about 20,000 spots. So nothing to really take too seriously or think too much about. So Jimenez getting the late goal really helped as well. And then obviously the Nick Pope clean sheet too. So as you mentioned, Brandon, there's only nine matches this game week. There's two to count, but those two are pretty big. So we're not going to get too caught up in overall rank stuff or, even the always cheating super league. We're not going to run through that because it's going to change so much between today and tomorrow. So I think we should just get right into our game week 19 preview. But Brandon, do you want to thank our new producers first, or our new patrons? Excuse me, we have a new producer.
Yeah. Of course, our pledge month through December, just to close out the year, is going really well. Thanks for supporting what Josh and I do with the Always Cheating podcast. Yeah, and it's been a great year. So we're really proud and thankful to welcome these new Patreon supporters to the family. Yeah, big thanks to our new producer, this just in, right before we started recording this pod, Lindsay Rostel. I hope we're pronouncing that right. Lindsay, let us know and welcome aboard. We're going to be saying your name a lot at the end of the podcast. At the Lord Sorloth tier, big welcome to Convex, Frederick Asmaro, Ross, Michael Hanna, and Sean. And at the Pookie level, welcome to Michael Littman, Ben Bibby, Tyler Ogilvie, and Alex Rosinski. Thanks, guys.
Big thanks. As you mentioned, Brandon, it was this has been the Always Cheating pledge month. We try not to hit people up too much to support the podcast. But if you if you want to talk about the Premier League and the fantasy game over the holidays, our Slack is a great place to do it. It's a really it's very upbeat. It can get very serious and very heated when we're talking about transfers or when people are going off in the rant and rage thread. But I think in general, it is a very polite and upbeat place to be. And so it's a place where every time I'm in it, I feel very happy. So we also do an extra podcast each week as well. This upcoming week may be the only time we don't do it. I may try to do one the evening of Boxing Day, but it might be tricky because I'm planning to basically kind of like, that's my free day, Boxing Day. I'm going to be going to the bar very early that day. So
you might be a little sauced at that
point.
Yeah,
I may be, but if I'm not, we'll be doing one. If not, we'll be certainly squeezing another bonus pod in over the next week or two. So, but yeah, thank you. Thank you again to everyone who supports the podcast, current, past, current, and future patrons. And Patreon.com. Wow.
Way to work a Christmas Carol reference into the podcast. Very seasonal of you, Josh. I applaud that.
Yeah, so Patreon.com/alwayscheatingis where you can go to learn more. All right, so Boxing Day fixtures, Brandon. This is kind of a different podcast for us. We're not going to go through all the stuff that we normally go through. We're not actually even taking any questions. We're just going to look at Game Week 19. Get in and get the hell out. All right. Yeah. So Boxing Day kicks off this Thursday with a very big match. It's kind of, you know, I guess I'm glad that we're kicking this one off because we'll just get it out of the way. It's a little tough to talk about the Spurs match without the Spurs match having been played yet for this weekend, yeah, but Let's assume that all things go fairly normally, right? That they, I don't know, let's say they beat Chelsea 2-1 tomorrow with a goal from Kane and a goal from Son and an assist from Ali and an assist from Aurier. How about that? That's my
fine,
completely made up prediction for tomorrow. okay. So, but you know, no injuries, maybe Son gets taken off in the 82nd minute, something like that. So, would you consider captaining a Spurs player for Boxing Day?
Yeah, it's a funny matchup because, I mean, managerial changes aside at Spurs, you look back at the earlier fixture, the reverse fixture, and Brighton, that was the Connolly unveiling game, right, where he put on a clinic. And yep. I think that was also the game where Hugo Lloris just destroyed his shoulder or arm. Mm-hmm. But it was a 3-0 victory to Brighton. How much has changed at Spurs? I mean, they do look really invigorated. You would think, and then with their home supporters in front of them, that Spurs would be the favored team. But you have to believe that Brighton learned a fair amount about Spurs playing them in that reverse fixture. So they're a decent matchup. I don't think that Spurs are just going to blow them wide open. Mm-hmm. If I had to predict a scoreline, it would be something the likes of 2-0 Spurs, maybe 2-1 Spurs, given the form that they're in. Is that enough for me to want to captain and continue to be whole hog on Spurs as we kind of are right now? I'm feeling averse to it, if you're asking me right now.
Yeah, there's something about all the matches. There's like a human element to it too, where just all of these matches, super long day, tons of stuff happening. I guess technically it's only 9 matches on Thursday. There is a Wolves and Man City play on Friday as a standalone fixture. Which actually is great because I think it makes KDB and Jimenez very rotation proof, at least for that one match. I think I'm reluctant to do it because if it didn't go off, you know, it's actually funny because I think it was maybe 2 years ago when or was it last year? I can't remember. I think it was 2 years ago when Harry Kane, I think, had a hat trick in the early fixture on Boxing Day. And
it was against Southampton. I remember this.
Yeah. And I didn't captain him for this very reason. Like, it was like almost an exact, almost exact situation as we're in right now. I can't believe I'm just remembering this. Maybe that is silly because I guess the flip side is that if you captain somebody in the early match and they do well, the rest of the day is just kind of gravy, right? Like, you've already got your captain points banked. You're good. So I guess that's one way to think about it. I think Brighton are just not hugely impressive right now. That fabled Brighton defense, I don't know if it, maybe it was never fabled, but they were off to a pretty strong start under Graham Potter. The first half of the season, I thought they were pretty impressive. Matt Ryan in particular was just kind of I guess even, you know, he was always a better fantasy asset than the team was super strong defensively, right? Because they were still conceding a lot of shots and, he was getting points even when they weren't keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, definitely one of those fantasy goalkeepers where his value was the fact that Brighton's defense was leaky enough that they were conceding more difficult shot opportunities that Ryan still had to save, but they weren't big chances enough that they were, that their opposing teams were just slotting them home left and right, and Matt Ryan was just racking up the saves. Yep. But that just doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
So that said, I mean, we would expect them to concede some goals. I mean, the question is, it's Mourinho does not strike me as somebody who is interested in doing a ton of rotation right now. I wonder if he's maybe of the opinion that this team was not playing and fighting super hard under Pochettino. I mean, you look at Dele Alli, I'm not saying that Dele Alli quit, but it was not working, however he was being played under Pochettino, it just was not.
I'll say he quit.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll put my neck out there.
I mean, it's like, it's always like a thing. It's like hard to throw that out, at somebody, but it does kind of feel like he just did kind of quit a little bit. And so, we're also talking about like 22-year-olds. So, it's sure. I mean, I've quit on people a lot, especially when I was younger. So sure. So do we think that there's any rotation threat among these three players? I mean, Son is the player who was a rotation risk under Pochettino, but I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that
No, I don't. Yeah. I really don't. And Jose Mourinho's reputation is just that, to not rotate. And I think he seems to be a very political figure in the locker room. And he asks for players to be aligned with him and his way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that is probably what leads to his ultimate downfall after a couple of seasons. But I think he's picked his team, and you see, I think Son is right up there with Harry Kane right now, and that when Son is fit, he'll play absolutely every minute. I think Son was the only player of this FPL relevant set of Spurs attackers that Mourinho took with him to their pointless Champions League fixture to finish out the group stage.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have this idea that Son is Mourinho's talismanic player right now, and maybe he's just trying to bolster Son with all that confidence. And I would say I don't think it's too controversial to say that Son is probably Spurs' best player. You could look at Kane's career in its totality and say how much he's accomplished and what he does mean to that club. But I think it is in Mourinho's best interest to back Son as much as he has.
This is like the Sadio Mane thing, where it's like, is Sadio Mane the best, Liverpool's best player, best attacker? And it's like, you kind of don't want to say yes, because traditionally he has not been, but based on what you've seen the last calendar year, the answer is yes. And it kind of feels that way with Son too, where because Harry Kane has had so many great seasons, it's hard to say that, but certainly based on recent evidence, I think that you would have to give Son the edge there.
Yeah. But if you were to be concerned about any of the Spurs players, it has to be Lucas Moura. I mean, Lucas Moura is coming off of a really good performance in game week 17, and he is the value pick here. But with that value pick comes the concern. And I think if anyone's going to get rested or rotated or dropped, it's going to be Lucas Moura on Boxing Day or New Year's.
Well, yeah. And he's just not a player. And that's one of the reasons I haven't really ever considered him as an asset. I just don't think I really trust him as a consistent starter in that team. He could earn it. If he does, he's great value. But I wouldn't recommend. I mean, like, if he was rested for the Chelsea match, then you'd think he was going to come in and start at midweek, maybe. I don't know. Like, is that's like probably overcomplicating things, right? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps. So what about Spurs defense, though? We have definitely been poo-pooing the idea for the last couple of weeks, and then you went and got Serge Aurier and – well, the appeal has to be how far up the pitch he's getting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just that feeling that we've all been having, which is and you saw it at the end of today's matches, right? I mean, boom, Palace concede 80 whatever minute it was. Who else conceded? Bournemouth conceded. Maybe that wasn't as much of a shocker, but no one's keeping clean sheets. Aston Villa were imperious at home for a short time, and now they're just kind of garbage, their defense. And, you know, granted, part of that's because Mings is injured, but, you know, it's no one can keep clean sheets. And so it kind of seems reasonable to just to focus on the, you know, on the ones who can attack a little bit and get you points two different ways. Because, you know, trying to hunt around and find, it's like the, you know, the Tomori thing. It's like trying to hunt around and find that like cheap sub 5 million player who's going to consistently get you points. I mean, yes, that Sheffield United are like the only place you can go right now to find that. And I guess, you know, Sanyeochu counted for a while too, although I think his price now is up to 5.2 million or something like that. But otherwise it's just like, just pick your, you know, just pick a player and hope that you can get, you know, hope that you can get lucky one way or the other with attacking points or with clean sheets. I honestly, even with someone like Aurier, it's like I just want one or the other. You know, I don't have any. I'm not going into tomorrow thinking to myself, oh yeah, like I can't wait to bank that 12 pointer from him. You know, right. So yeah, I mean, I guess that was the rationale. I still don't think their defense is, although I think their defense is, it's like I'm getting a little more like, I don't know, like I'm feeling slightly better about it. It helps that that Alderweireld just re-signed and that Mourinho is pushing Vertonghen to do the same thing. And it does feel like maybe there's a, you know, Mourinho loves an older defender too. So there might just be like, you know, feeling like, okay, maybe this team is like settling in a little bit, you know, like it's like they're kind of, they're in this together. I mean, there's just like a feeling of like togetherness and like that feeling that they're all just like on the way out is dissipating. Obviously Eriksen is probably on the way out. But I think that with everyone else, it seems like maybe they're kind of closing ranks a little bit.
So then there's Brighton. the ship seems to have sailed. Mape is doing his best. Sorry, Joe and all you Brighton fans out there. But Mape is really doing his best to stay in the conversation. Was the match we were watching today, did he have a goal chalked off because of VAR or some such? It was like Connolly passed, squared him the ball, but somebody else was offside in the buildup, I think it was. Anyway, he continues to find himself in these positions. And at 5.8, we just kind of like want Mape to really be a thing. Mm-hmm. It is a blank against Sheffield United after three goals in three straight matches.
Yes.
Against Arsenal, Wolves, and Palace, all fairly decent defenses. Mm-hmm. So I still think Mape is worth a look. I don't know if you want to be bringing him in this road match to Spurs during this heavily congested period after which he had played, or before which he had played, four matches, the full 90 in a row.
Worth a long, lingering look, Brandon. You can let that look, you can let your gaze hold for a minute. But then I think ultimately, I mean, it just feels like you're kind of like, who are you bringing him in for? You know, like, are you downgrading a better player for him? If so, I see that as a, like, there's almost nobody like in that kind of sub 8 million range who I think I'd rather have him over, you know? And if you're upgrading, I feel like you might as well just find more money and upgrade to somebody who's better. I mean, Timo Pukki today, really aggressive, probably quite unlucky to come away with nothing from today's match. He really, he had one goal, like a big breakaway moment late where he could have scored. And so, you know, Pukki or Ings or something like that, like it's like just spend the extra 0.5, 0.6 million to get someone who's mostly, it's the holidays. Someone, you know, all of these players are liable to get rest at least once, but, you know, you can't really think that way because I think one of the stories of the festive fixtures that we know time and again is that we all panic about rotation and there ends up being a lot less of it than we expect, you know? So, they'll all get rested for one and that's just something you're going to have to like just handle, you know?
Yeah. I think the last note that we could have on this fixture is just from my perspective, though I've discussed frustration with Matt Ryan's form since that Leicester City match, he's got Spurs away and then you look at a Chelsea home match on New Year's Day. But after that, I think the fixtures start to clear up a bit for Brighton. So I'm going to use a bit of patience with my Brighton goalkeeper and just not choose to deal with that situation.
Yep. No, I would do the same thing. It's surprising that he hasn't been racking up more saves. I mean, it's almost like the defense has gotten better, but in a way that's only hurt him in fantasy. So
yeah, I think that's right.
All right, Aston Villa, Norwich. I just realized this could be like a 2-hour podcast if we're not careful here, but so just let's try to keep it fantasy focused here. Aston Villa, Norwich. Norwich have looked quite a bit better, to the point where I almost certainly have to start Todd Cantwell for this match. If you have Cantwell, you have to start him in this Aston Villa match, don't you?
Yeah, well, this is my issue. I'm looking at my bus team and I still can't find a way to get Cantwell in because Son, Ali, De Bruyne, Grealish. And Grealish is part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Home Norwich for Grealish. You have to play him as well.
Of course.
So playing three more heavy-hitting strikers up front,
yeah,
if you can qualify these as such, but Vardy, Abraham, and Rashford, I can't bench them either, so there is no way for me to fit Cantwell in. I mean, who among those would you drop to the bench to play Cantwell?
Wait, it's who is it again? It's
Vardy, Abraham, and Rashford. But if you look
at
and then it's Son, Dele, and De Bruyne and Grealish in my midfield.
Okay, fine. You don't have to start him, but he's a valuable player, Brandon. In case any of these players get rotated,
I want to start him. Don't get me wrong, I do.
No, I won't get you wrong. I hear you. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what, one interesting thing, I was thinking about is because the Spurs match is early, if there is some rotation, among any of the Spurs players for that matter, nowadays, I feel like we're getting leaks for that early match all the time. And so, it may be, that I swap out Son or Ali for a Liverpool midfielder, which is something I have about 4 million in the bank right now, so that I can make that move with no issue. And that was actually why, and just I don't mean to double back on a team we've already talked about, but I did feel a little guilty because in the last podcast I sort of advocated for not dropping one of your Liverpool midfielders if you have them, because you're just going to want to bring them right back in. And then I went and did it anyway. And the reason that I ultimately did it was because I realized that Son was the player that I wanted. And if I made the moves the way that I made them, I would have enough money to move Ali to Salah or Sané, Salah or Mane, without burning any points. And so as long as I gave myself that way to move right back into that player, I was okay with making that move. And fact that Salah played 210 minutes in the World Club Cup has me kind of panicked I don't think you can bring him back in now ahead of Boxing Day, because I think there's even though they're playing Leicester, I think there's a good chance he doesn't start that match.
Right. Okay, so back to this Villa-Norwich match. So we talked about Cantwell. Cantwell is good. Mm-hmm. Play Cantwell if you can. Pukki is the other Norwich player that I guess we just want to touch upon, in that he's back in form. The fractured toe seems to be fine, in that he's at least getting enough pain injections that are legal.
Toe's doing.
Or
don't you worry about that toe, Brandon. It's doing just fine.
So, I mean, is there any temptation to look at Pukki for you?
No, it's funny. I've got Cantwell. That seems like enough. I feel like I just played this game. You know, I just had Pukki for game week 6 through 12, or, 6 through 11, or however long I had him for. We didn't do anything. He's back to, he had 2 blanks in his last 3, missed a huge chance today. You wonder if that does anything to his confidence. So, I'm not dying to bring him back into my team. I'd rather have Tammy Abraham as the player who I'd rather have. Musa Abraham is a move I would consider for this weekend, for Boxing Day.
Yeah, in your eternal quest to cover my team, it's the coward's way.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah,
I hate how temple Cantwell my team is this game week.
Cantwell is definitely the move in Norwich. I agree with you. And at 4.7, I think this guy just still presents a lot of value. So the big worry with Aston Villa right now is that John McGinn went off today with some sort of ankle foot injury, and the assessment is that it doesn't look good, and he'll almost certainly be out for Boxing Day, if sure. not for a few more weeks or longer. And how does that, like, McGinn has kind of fallen off the map as far as an FPL concern, but you have to believe he's still very integral to how that ball moves around the Villa midfield. So I don't know if I then want to get further involved beyond Jack Grealish, even if Jack Grealish is too much involvement with Aston Villa right now.
Don't you wish that Wesley was actually good? That would make things so much easier if you could just bring in Wesley, you know?
Yeah, but it would.
Yeah, I think, Grealish seems fine because he's just like, it's funny. He like is turning into what we thought McGinn was going to be, which is like he just shoots these like beautiful goals from outside the box, kind of like, uh-huh. I don't know how he's getting this space so often. I mean, I guess he's just quick and just shoots really, you know, just shoots quickly too. That goal today was just a beautiful, completely self-created goal, you know, just with a, you know, second of space and he just curls it, you know, cross field. It was, really, really beautiful. So I think that there is, you know, there's an argument to be made for maybe like a cheeky captain for him. I think that the captaincy decision is about as tricky in game week 19 as it was in game week 18. Really tough to decide on anybody. So Grealish, I think, is reasonable. The Spurs players are reasonable. Maybe just Kevin De Bruyne again. I mean, the guy's pretty good, Brandon. I don't know if you knew this, but he was amazing yet again today.
Yeah, when he was denied some opportunity, my brain is completely fried right now. I'm struggling to recall what attacking opportunity he was denied sort of midway through the
when he got the yellow card, whatever it was. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right. He was driving toward goal and you thought he was going to shoot it. And then he tried to square it and just kind of like blew the opportunity.
Yeah, got a little too cute.
And then his frustration started yelling at the referee and got a yellow for dissent.
Yeah.
And you turned to me and you said, well, this is the point at which De Bruyne feels he was owed a return. So he will just go and take his return.
Yes.
Flash forward to smash cut. De Bruyne just powers through the Leicester City back line easily squares it to Jesus. He's amazing.
If you have De Bruyne in your team, you always want him to get angry because he is he's unbelievable when he's angry. It was amazing that he only walked away with 4 points in that game because he was his stat. I'm not even going to repeat them because I saw them on social media earlier, but he was he created like an insane number of chances today. It was, you know, the tops on both teams for sure. He's awesome, but we'll get to him in a minute. Let's move on from Aston Villa, Norwich, Bournemouth, Arsenal. Anything to say on this one? I mean, are you going to start Sergio Rico in this one? What do you think? Or Diego Rico? Are we finally going to get
Diego
this one
Rico.
Right?
No, we will never get it right. We will never get it right. No, I can't start Diego Rico because he suddenly picked up a yellow card suspension.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't have played him anyway.
No, I mean, the pain and anguish with this Rico character continues. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone out there listening has actually played Rico when he has scored points. He only scores points when he's on your bench.
Yep.
And you have an opportunity that you believe you can play him. Mm-hmm. He just turns around and he screws you.
Yeah.
So, no, I can't. Bournemouth have been, you know, been slightly better just in terms of, like, it took Nathan Ake, their best defender, getting injured for them to finally be scared into trying to keep clean sheets.
Yeah.
I mean, Bournemouth was able to score on them, but their defense still looked decent. That said, they have nothing to offer going forward. And then Arsenal are just in this intense state of fluctuation. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to see what Arteta is going to bring to the table here, who he's going to play, how is he planning to play Aubameyang, is Lacazette going to play a role? There are just too many unknowns with Arsenal, even though there could be huge upside if Arteta comes in and right away gets them more organized and empowered.
It has me more excited about the club than I've been in a long, long time. Everything he says is like, I don't know. He's just like, he's smart. He's like, I don't know. I just like, he like, he's really, he's cared himself perfectly since he's been hired. But I mean, yeah, we'll see. you know, we'll see what it looks like on the pitch. I'm like you. I'm not going to.
As far as managers go, I think he'll do well because he has the perfect balance in his face of looking serious and angry and kind of approachable all at the same time.
Yeah. He's like a, he's so handsome. It's hard to like, he can't look ugly. You know, even if he's like scowling, it still sort of looks, you know, approachable. All right. So, not a lot to say about that one, mostly because it's just hard to even know what that match could look like. I mean, Bournemouth just cannot get anything going right now. I mean, now that Callum Wilson was on the bench, so maybe by this match you've got Wilson and King back up front again, and that should right the ship a little bit. But I would not be surprised if Arsenal scored in that one. Chelsea-Southampton, and this is an interesting match. I think Chelsea-Southampton is it's a stay away if you're a gambler, you know, because Chelsea are in weird form, right? They're the kind of weird form that like a young team can get into, you know, where they're sort of like they are talented and they are good, but a lot of them haven't really been through the grind of this before. It's like something you see in college sports a lot, you know, where like a bunch of the young players just slump for a while because they just aren't used to the sustained pressure of a full campaign.
Yeah. Looking at my bus team right now, I'm just enticed by Southampton home, and I've given the armband to Tammy Abraham.
Yeah.
I think we need to see how Chelsea look against Spurs on Sunday and how many minutes Tammy gets. You're talking about that threat of rotation that Lampard sort of intoned. So that would weigh on you. And if you think there was an opportunity to start somebody like Batshuayi up front, it could be home against Southampton. So that's a little niggling concern.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the concern that I would have about bringing him in for Moussaï, which would be kind of the obvious move to make. I guess I don't really like that because that's sort of all my cash for the move back to Liverpool defender or midfielder would be kind of spent on that. If I went Jimenez to Tammy, I could do it. I mean, the question to me is just like, you were talking about this with Rashford on the last week's podcast, but I mean, given what we've seen with Jimenez the last few weeks and kind of maybe just the last 10 weeks or so, I mean, do you really feel like Tammy is just a straight up better fantasy asset than Raúl Jiménez? It feels like almost a waste of a transfer to move from Jiménez to Tammy. You know, I'm just not sure which one is the player to have, you know? And so I don't know. Like, it feels like whoever you've got, you just stick with, you know? I'm not sure that I feel like I'm seeing you can always tell when I start saying, you know, a lot, it's because I don't quite know. I'm not confident in opinion, you know, and I'm starting to sort of question myself a little bit. But
let me put it this way: with Jimenez, who got two assists in the reverse fixture against Man City, you remember that those two assists went to our dope friend Adama Traore.
Yep.
Jimenez has only blanked twice since game week 8. I mean, it does seem odd that he has had so few blanks and that he had a 4-week goal drought before he scored today against Norwich City.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's been banging the goals in, but
right.
I think at 7.5, it's just straight up value for money. And
yeah,
if you compare him to Tammy Abraham, I do think you're right that it's kind of like whoever you have now, I think you just kind of stick with them for the short term.
Yeah.
And when you have a chance and an opportunity to pivot from one to the other, when it makes sense, go for it.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on that front. I think the Jimenez to Rashford, that is an argument. That's a conversation I'm willing to have. You know, that's one that I'm a little more – that would turn my head a little bit more, because I think that if – and I don't have Rashford on my team right now. If Rashford just completely goes off at home to Watford tomorrow or away to Watford tomorrow, and they play Newcastle at home a few days later, to not have him when I have 3.8 million in the bank right now, and I could just do it without burning any points at all, and I'd still have enough money to move Son to a Liverpool player, in game week 21 or whenever I decided to do it, it feels like I might be like getting a little too cute by not bringing him in. So that I think is a slightly different argument, but it's one I don't really want to have until we see how Rashford looks tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, so I guess of all the teams that we're looking at here, I think Chelsea might be the one where it's the biggest rotation concern because there are no great form players for Chelsea right now. Pulisic is a huge concern, and Hudson-Odoi is someone who could come in and play in his place. Mason Mount can sort of cover similar territory as Pulisic. So, I would be a little concerned as far as Chelsea rotation.
Yeah.
Southampton, on the other hand, Danny Ings is going to play. He's in great form. If you're sitting on Ings right now, you're going to play him with confidence against Chelsea.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because I guess nothing bad is going to happen to Ings the rest of the year. And that is incredible. What a run. And I mean, I want to see it. I want to see him start all 38. Has he started every match so far this year? I think he has. So
that can't possibly be true.
I think
is that true?
It is. Okay. He has played in every match. He has not started a couple early on. He did not start every match. He started every match, I believe.
And the Che Adams era.
Exactly. He started every match since game week 7 when they finally Che Adams, by the way, he's down 0.7 from his starting price of 6 million, 5.3 million now.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. That's wild. So I think, Ings is having a great season and, nothing bad's going to happen there. So, Crystal Palace, West Ham, this is the match where not having a Palace defender it feels like that one could come back to haunt me a little bit. I mean, I need Antonio to show some magic on that match. Here's the other way to look at it is that West Ham have had the longest break off of anybody. They basically got a winter holiday, right? They haven't played since last Saturday. They didn't play in the League Cup, did they? I don't think they had they weren't in the League Cup.
No, they did not.
So they've had they'll have a week and a half off. Everyone will be rested. Seems like there's a chance they could come in either a little rusty or they could come in supercharged because Palace will have had a pretty tough away match to Newcastle just a couple days before that. And they're still on a kind of a skeleton crew in the back line.
But when you talk about being rusty, it boggles my mind. Mikel Antonio is seemingly always coming back from an injury. It's like every match, all 38 game weeks, Mikel Antonio is coming back from injury. And whenever he does, he looks fabulous. He looks sensational. Yeah. So I don't know that some of these players on West Ham understand what rust is. I guess it's a big problem for Sebastian Haller, who had a huge goal drought and he just needed to score. Yep. He finally scores in game week 17 against Southampton, and then he has to take virtually 2 weeks off. So that wasn't great for him.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say the other thing about Antonio is he's always just come back from an injury, and he's always just missing a spectacular goal too. How often do you feel like you see highlights of Antonio just missing some incredible goal?
I know. Yeah. Think of all the amazing goal celebrations that we've been robbed of seeing just because of that. But I don't know. The Palace defense is obviously great. You just think it's harder for their luck to hang in there during the fixture pileup. They will start leaking goals through fatigue or just sort of the natural order of things.
They already have the last two, right? I mean, they conceded to Brighton and to Newcastle, two matches where you probably would have expected them to keep clean sheets. So I suppose it's already happening. The leak.
Yeah. And the problem for the new best goalkeeper in the league, Guaita, is that now Palace are playing bad teams who don't get chances and don't shoot. Therefore, Guaita can't get 10 saves.
Right.
unreal to see Guaita only get 2 saves against Newcastle.
That's true. But what an incredible rarity that is. Everton Burnley, I suppose this will be the first match with Ancelotti in charge. Thought they played okay today. Missing some steel in the midfield for sure. That game was awful. There's no getting around it. Arsenal Everton, it was not a fun match to watch. It was a good sleepy early morning match, I suppose, if you didn't have any stakes in the match, but Pickford had one good save. That was the only moment.
Remind me what Manola Dargis said about Eli Roth in Inglourious Bastards.
In a word, dreadful.
Yeah.
Yeah, dreadful.
Yeah, Manolo Dargis should write for the Guardian sports column. I think that would be perfect.
That was A.O. Scott, by the way.
Oh, but, was it? Okay,
The point still stands. So Everton Burnley, do we need to say anything about this match? I briefly considered bringing in Richarlison, by the way, going into this game week, and then I forgot how hilariously expensive he is, and I was not going to do it.
Richarlison could be worth the money if he were to become a consistent player, because he is good when he is doing his thing. The problem is, over the three seasons that we've known him, he hasn't been able to do it. So it's got to be a pass for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, six goals and three assists through 18 weeks isn't that bad. You know, he had 13 goals last season. So the guy is not like a complete flop or anything like that. But he just always seems like he's capable of more. And they've got a great run. I would say the thing with so you give Ancelotti a few weeks, and then starting game week 22, they have a really nice run of matches through like the middle of February. So, you know, I'm going to wait 3 weeks, and then maybe I would consider bringing in somebody from this team. Maybe Dean.
Yeah, for me, I think Lucas Dean is the one to watch during the Ancelotti turnover. They kept their clean sheet today. Dean is back and healthy and involved. And at 5.7, I think that's a decent price for what we know of Dean.
Yeah, got three bonus points today as well. All right, let's move on to Sheffield United Watford. Brandon Lundstrom, captain. Would you consider it?
Has Sheffield United had a bad fixture all season? Every time I look at the fixture ticker, Sheffield United playing garbage team. I suppose so. There was a moment this morning watching Sheffield United Brighton where Lundstrom was the farthest player forward, breaking the last defender almost in on Matt Ryan. He's getting so far forward. It does make a compelling case to captain him.
Yeah.
Will I do it? I don't know if I have the courage. I think it does take courage.
It does take courage. The Duffy captaincy from last season still stings me a little bit. You know, it's always the problem with captaining a defender is it just takes nothing at all for a clean sheet to get lost. You know, just the one person slips on the grass, one ball rolls out for a corner kick, and the corner kick hits somebody in the shoulder just the right way, and you can play great defense and still concede goals. So that's always the issue. And then so the question is, do I think that he is one of the three best attackers for this game week? And the answer is no. I mean, I don't. I mean, I think he's a good attacker, but I don't think him as one of the best. And so I mean, maybe he's like a vice captain. He's like a safe vice captain pick for this game week.
Can I make a very abstract argument here in favor of Watford? Watford now have Nigel Pearson as their manager. If any manager can figure out the, Great Britain United, that is Sheffield United, it could be another like giant white British man in Nigel Pearson.
It's a thought.
That's a thought out there. That's my very Djangoistic thought about how the tactics are going to go on this
match. It's a shame that by the time this pod goes up, most people will listen to it after Watford have played. I'm really curious how they look at home to Man United tomorrow. I think that'll tell you. I mean, the guy has coached some strong defensive teams, right? He coached one that I know of, but he did keep Leicester up their first year in the league. So, his son basically got him the boot, right? I mean, from that club, it wasn't like they were itching to get rid of him. It was such a disaster after his first year.
Pearson could take the credit for some of the transfer strategies that brought in the likes of Mahrez and Conte. So some people say. I don't know how true that is.
Sure. Yeah, neither of us are Leicester experts. But all right. So, yeah, Sheffield United, I mean, I think it's – again, I wouldn't necessarily suggest you transfer in any of their players because their fixtures get really rough after this one. That brings us to the later matches on the Boxing Day. There's two. The first one is Man United Newcastle. And as you could hear me say on this pod, I'm sort of – I would consider bringing in Marcus Rashford. I would definitely consider doing that before this match. I mean, you talked about armband captain. I think that he's an excellent armband captain pick as well.
Yeah, the knock on Manchester United and Rashford, right, is that they perform better when they're playing an attacking team that leaves some space behind, meaning trying to explain how they took it to Manchester City and Spurs before them. And then you get concerned at a team like Newcastle that, particularly on the road at Old Trafford, might pack the back a little bit and make it difficult. So I think we'll know a lot, as you've been mentioning, based on what we see on Sunday when United go away to Watford. And I think that might actually be enough to inspire me to, let's say, at least vice captain young Marcus Rashford against Newcastle.
And when we talk about holiday rotation, I think he's a lot less rotation prone than almost any of the big captain picks that we're considering. I just don't know how much of an attack they really have without him in the squad. So I think it's interesting to see that Pogba has traveled with the team. I don't know if that means anything, if that means he even makes the bench tomorrow, but he's been like walking with a cane for months. So it'll be very interesting to see what he looks like if he's back on the pitch in any significant way.
Maybe he's going to take a meeting with Nigel Pearson. I mean, the January window is going to be open soon.
Maybe. What do you think? I mean, he actually would. What would Paul Pogba look like on a team like Watford? Like if he like really cared, you know? I don't mean like just chasing a paycheck, but like if he went to Watford and he was like, I am going to be the greatest player in the history of Watford FC. You know, and just,
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I decided he was going to spend the next, like, you know, 5 years of his career just like be like Eric Cantona, you know, just like changing everything about Watford. That'd be amazing. Probably not going to happen, though.
I really don't know what. Can we spare a moment, though, for Newcastle, which are riding high after. We're all riding high. We can finally stop talking about Miguel Almiron.
Yeah.
We can stop talking about how he hasn't scored a goal. He scored his goal, and now he can just disappear into the sky.
Yeah.
Where perhaps he ought to be. But all that said, Steve Bruce has got these guys.
It's incredible.
Humming.
They're not good, and they're in ninth place. It's incredible. They, you know, 7-4-7, they're in 25 points. They probably only have to win like five home matches, you know, if that, and they're guaranteed to stay up again this year, which is incredible. Who would have thought? I mean, they have, you know, 3 wins in the last 4. Almost certainly not going down. It's but you look at that team and there's basically no one who impresses you. There's no one you really want from a fantasy team. Even their defense is beat up right now. And it's, I think, honestly, a lot of it is just the power of a really good home stadium and a crowd that really gets them up for these matches. And I think it's something that Miguel Arteta spoke to when he came in, which is just that this culture of negativity and that can really hurt a team. And I think I guess I'm talking generally not about fantasy here, but it certainly changes fantasy as well. And you know, when people, I mean, it makes Newcastle defenders worth owning, right? Because they just have a decent chance to keep it a clean sheet in these matches because I just think the crowd gets them so pumped up, you know? And so I feel it's like they steal an extra 10 points every year just based on that crowd alone.
Right. So we haven't heard what's going on with Jethro Willem speaking about investing in Newcastle's defense. And he wasn't even in the squad.
I know. And you love that guy. Saturday. So I assume you'll have the information soon. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is there.
He has a muscular injury, according to Dinnery's site, currently injury. Ruled out. So there's precious little information there. If I had to. So I don't think there's any one main player via FPL to recommend on Newcastle right now, given that Jethro Willem is a flag. But if I were to predict anything, I think it's Andy Carroll scores against Manchester United.
I certainly wouldn't. I didn't even really seriously consider bringing in a Man United defender, which is kind of crazy because they're in pretty good form and they have a really nice run of fixtures. And I just looked at them and I thought, who would I even bring in? Like, what player would you be excited to bring in from their defense? I mean, how long? When is the last time they kept a clean sheet? It's some like ridiculous number of matches, isn't it? I think it's it goes back to like game week 3 or something like that when they last kept a clean sheet. It's quite a long run.
Let's see,
game week 5. Yeah, so game week 5, which is kind of a funny one too, because that was the Leicester match. So they kept a clean sheet at home to Leicester, and that is the last time they've kept a clean sheet. And so it's been, what, 13 weeks? That's pretty long.
Yeah. All right. Give me a score line. We haven't been doing score lines on many of these fixtures, but this one, it feels like a pat 2-1 win for Manchester United, right?
I mean, I think it could be like a 4-0 win or something, but it just depends on – I don't know. I want to see how they look tomorrow before I make a prediction. It feels premature to do that. And now – so it sounds like – Jethro Williams got injured, and then Paul Dummett, who came on for him, got injured as well. So they may have like a full-on massive injury crisis at Newcastle, which would be something that we'd have to keep an eye on. So I don't know. So let's. I don't want to rush to make a prediction there, Brandon. I'll stay 4-0, and I'm fine if I'm wrong.
The diplomat.
Yeah. Final match on Boxing Day is Leicester hosting Liverpool. Great, great match. I wish it wasn't coming, you know, with this Club World Cup thing, because it feels like we're not necessarily seeing Liverpool in kind of their normal form. I mean, they did win it, so I guess that's good. But it feels, you know, I don't know. I would ideally not have them jet off to Qatar for a week before this match. You know. So what do you think?
It's true.
Yeah. What do you think happens in this match?
I just think Liverpool are too good. And I think a little bit of airline travel. They were talking about this on the Second Captain's podcast and related it to Chernobyl. Like, is it really that bad that the Liverpool players are exposed to this level of football radiation? No, it's fine. Trent Alexander-Arnold plays an extra 90 minutes. You can't get your feathers too ruffled. I mean, there's a critical mass of all this football over the course of the season. But I think if we're just looking at this Leicester match, this is one of those, let's see, what Liverpool win this match, it's almost done. And I think it's going to be one that they play a full strength team for. And Leicester will have just come off the back of that tough Manchester City fixture.
Yeah.
Maybe feeling a little beaten up. I mean, in that second half against Manchester City, I think Leicester were finally kind of exposed as, you know, they're not pretenders, but they were just exposed as this project is still younger than we treat it.
Yeah.
The Brendan Rodgers team.
Yeah.
So
I think I mean, you think about the quality of the recent Liverpool Man City matches, the one they played 2 months ago and the one they played last January, and those were like, that was just so clearly the two best teams, you know, just like going head to head in both cases. And I agree with you. I mean, I think Leicester's great, but it's all about just get a Champions League spot and holding on to that, and that I think they've got a really good chance of doing. They're 11 points ahead of their nearest competitors are Sheffield United, Brandon, in fifth place. So they're 11 points ahead of. They've got 13-point lead on Spurs, 14 on Man United too, although both those teams have a game in hand. So, but even if they both win tomorrow, it's still 10 points and 11 that they're ahead. And it's hard to see Leicester just completely falling off at any point, as long as Vardy keeps his form up.
Yeah, it's incredible. So, I mean, you play Vardy with confidence. You don't captain him. The big question FPL-wise with this fixture is you've got two camps. You've got the camp that you're in, right, where you strategically transferred out some of your big Liverpool players.
Yeah.
Do you immediately bring them in for this Leicester match? The other camp are the people who are just benching their Manes, their Salahs, their Trent Alexander-Arnolds here in the game week 18 blank. They will definitely want to start their Liverpool, obviously want to start their Liverpool players in game week 19. How close are you to, I mean, I guess you've already kind of addressed this, and that you seem averse to bringing Liverpool assets back just for this Leicester fixture, given the travel to Qatar.
Yeah, I felt really strongly about just holding Salah. Maybe it was in the glow of the of his performance over the weekend. But I don't know how I could come on here and advocate for bringing him in after 210 minutes in Qatar over the last several days. It just feels – he probably starts and maybe he'll play fine, but it doesn't feel – it feels a little risky. It feels risky too now because he played so many minutes, it makes me not want to have him for game week 20 either, you know, because – let's say, I mean, Leicester's such a big match. Let's say he goes in and plays 90 in that. Then suddenly he's played whatever it is, you know, 120, 300 minutes in the last, you know, 10 days. At some point he would have to get a rest, I would think. And so that could be in game week 20. And so then I'm in a position where I'm probably just waiting until game week 21 to bring him back in. Now, if he gets rested for the Leicester match, then I would probably just go ahead and move him right back in at game week 20.
Yeah, I think game week 20 is really the one to target. And I've been talking the last few weeks about Liverpool attack being my blind spot, and I can't wait to get them in. And yeah, the way I'm approaching it too is I think I'm going to dodge this Leicester match, especially with Spurs kind of making up half of my midfield right now, having a decent home Brighton fixture.
Yeah.
That's good enough. I think that's good enough.
Yeah, you've got two transfers, right? So what is your are you thinking about maybe using one and keeping another, doing your famous move it along move?
I guess so. I guess so. So I have two defenders that I mentioned at the top where they're just kind of glorified 90-minute bench fodder, and Gilbert and Rico. This could be a good opportunity for me to just go in on a different defender who I'd be more comfortable starting over the course of the next month.
Yeah.
So it does feel like maybe it's a quiet defensive transfer for me, roll into another two free transfers going into game week 20. And that's when I run my my Liverpool gambit. Okay,
Martin Kelly, I guess, would probably be the clear contender there.
Yeah, who else would it be? Yeah, you have to like that home fixture against West Ham. I don't know. Is it too early to go for Lucas Dean?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's see. So they're playing Burnley, Newcastle. No, not necessarily. If you've got the money to do it, I mean, I guess I was thinking if you're dropping someone like Rico or Gilbert, that's a big move. You know, what's what 1.3 billion, but if you've got the money to do it, then sure.
I have 2.5 in the bank, so that's one that I'm going to consider. But yeah, you just look at the state of my defense right now, and while all these players play, it is kind of shocking with Rico and Gilbert and Soyuncu, Alexander. Yeah. The thing is, like, Soyuncu, Alexander, and Arnold and Lundstrom, these are three defenders that'll probably just start uniformly week in, week out. Yeah. So
be an interesting test. I mean, with Lundstrom playing Man City twice and away to Liverpool for that matter too. So Man City twice and away to Liverpool in the next 5 weeks. I mean, yeah, you're not gonna start for all those though, right? I mean, that's, I don't know. It's time to start thinking about having a cheap defender who is like a reliable asset for game weeks 20, 21, and 24.
Yeah,
I feel like those are the three that you'd really want to focus on. So I hadn't thought about this going into the pots. I don't have a good answer to that, but that might be something that if you're listening, you want to think about.
Okay, so I think we're covered on Leicester, Liverpool. So let's move on to Friday, the 27th, and talk about the last fixture, Wolves hosting Manchester City. So how convinced were you of Manchester City's form? Is it just all Kevin De Bruyne after watching the last two fixtures?
Kind of seems like it. I was saying I wasn't super like Jesus's goal celebration was like kind of all about him, you know, like, oh, I finally did it, you know, after missing all these chances, I finally did it. And I like maybe it was just like the way I read it a little bit, but it was like, I was like, come on, man, like you made a good run to score that goal, but that was like all KDB. And like, I feel like you score that and you like run up and you give a giant bear hug to KDB for padding your goals for the season, you know, because it was just a little too me centric. And I guess I just don't love Jesus. And so, you know, Aguero did come back in for a few minutes and If he's starting for this match, then yeah, they did look a little bit stronger. And so maybe they're coming around a little bit. It would be nice if David Silva was back in the squad, because it feels like he's really a hugely valuable player. Just in terms of linking up the central midfield and the forward line. But I think they've looked a lot better the last couple of game weeks, that's for sure.
But still, I just don't think enough has changed with Raheem Sterling. You talk about they're probably their most divisive fantasy asset this season. Sterling, yeah. You know, he went down for his penalty, but beyond that, he was struggling to get a lot of chances. It was just all De Bruyne through the middle,
yeah,
which is weird. It's like City have always been a wide team. Let's get it out wide and then cross it in. But now what seems to be working for them is just De Bruyne jamming it straight up the middle. And still, I just do feel like still, if you're a manager out there who's doubled up or you are on Sterling, there are still no indications that even if City's form is looking better, that Sterling is worth it, his 11.8 price tag.
Yeah. I think, I agree with you on Sterling. As far as the match itself goes, this seems like another match where City are going to be dominant. Wolves are going to find a way to find a draw or something like that. And I think this could be like a 1-1, possibly 2-1 Man City. I don't see this as being a hugely dominant Man City win. I mean, obviously Wolves really kind of showed you how to beat the kind of patched up Man City defense when they played them a few weeks ago. And I think a lot of teams probably copied that strategy a little bit. And so I think Man City would be ready for this team, maybe ready for Traore in a way that they weren't the last time they played.
Are you ever really ready for Traore though?
I don't know. His physicality is, there's not a lot, there's really no one like him in the league. So, I think you're right. So yeah, I think this is a tricky one to predict. I think that KDB is a reasonable call as a captain, or as a safe, maybe another safe-ish vice captain pick. I don't think this is a match where you would rest him. It seems like a little too tricky of a match to rest a player like him. I think you could do that for the game week 20 fixture. So, Brandon, that was a Boxing Day. That's where we are. This 30-minute podcast went a little long as I was expecting it to. So just once again, we did this straight through with no break. So I don't want to go too much into the Patreon thing again. But if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. And Brandon, can you thank our producer patrons? I'm out of breath here.
Huge thanks to our producers, as ever: Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Chris Carter, Martin Savage, Brian T, DeBig Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner, Lodall, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Frederick Kean Gransky, Travis West, Alan Creasy, Victor Forberg Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Stian Niehaus, Barry McGuire, Peter Boductel, Andy Portlock, Toothless Given, Andy Martin, and our newest producer, Lindsay Rostel. Huge thanks to our producers. And just one last note on Boxing Day. I hope everyone really enjoys following the matches, or just spending time with your family. I was talking to my wife about asking my family for Christmas gifts that they didn't actually have to buy me. Mm-hmm. I think I talked to you about this,
yeah.
Josh, but I think our listeners would appreciate it. My wife says, well, why don't you just ask your family for the ability to watch the Boxing Day fixtures? And I said, no, that's not a good idea, because then my family is going to want to watch them with me. There's nothing to be like watching Boxing Day fixtures alone. On Boxing Day, that's where I'm going
to
be at.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to doing. Well, watching at the bar, but watching it without the without the kiddos around. So, all right, Brandon. Well, you can follow us on all the usual places: Twitter. You can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. All of this stuff, Brandon. I'm not going to run through all of it right now, but it's all found on our website. Go to alwayscheating.com, or if you just look for Twitter, Always Cheating, Google. That's a very quick and easy and simple way to find us as well.
Yeah, if you Google Always Cheating, you'll primarily get FPL hits.
So yeah,
that's mostly something you can always count.
So a little bit of like, is he cheating on you type stuff as well, but mostly our podcast.
All right. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners and happy holidays. Thanks for a great year. I guess we'll be checking in before New Year's.
Yeah.
Because I'm back in town on the 27th.
Yep.
And we're definitely going to get a pod in before the clock strikes 2020.
Yep. I think we're trying. The goal right now tentatively is to do one on the 29th. So we will be back after, I guess, 2 game weeks have been played. But yeah, it felt a little too premature to talk about game week 20 before game week 18 is even finished. So, good luck to everybody. Enjoy the holidays. Enjoy Boxing Day. And we'll be back soon. Bye.
Bye.